finance will come later, and we will be operating as a work session until we get another member here. Senator Wilkin is in judiciary with the bill he is sponsoring. We're joined by Senator Hoffman, Dyson, Stedman, and myself, Senator Green. We are now a full working committee. We are going to be finishing off the supplemental presentations today. And we have Dwayne Peoples with Health and Social Services for questions and answers. And we'll begin with Health and Social Services for the supplemental fast track. You are prepared to do the fast track, aren't you, Janet, even though the schedule for this morning says Senate Bill 98?
Yes, Madam Chairman, for the record, Janet Clark with the Department of Health and Social Services. I think the last time we had a hearing on the supplemental bill, we had briefly talked about our fast track supplemental requests. And my understanding is that the committee still wanted a little bit more discussion on a couple of our supplemental items that are in the fast track bill.
For the record, Senator Olson has joined us, and we're starting on line 34. Is that correct? In that area between 34 and 38?
Yes. Madam Chairman, again, the last time we had a hearing, we did talk about line number 34. It's section 9A in the Fast Track Supplemental Bill. This is a request of the Alaska Pioneer Homes to replace federal receipts that we're not going to earn from the Medicaid program with receipt supportive services so that they can continue providing services to the pioneers who are in the homes. The receipt supportive services are actually payments that the residents make to the homes. And the legislature has routinely appropriated those back to the homes so that they can keep operating.
Senator Bundy has joined us. Morning. We're on line 34 in the fast track.
Thank you.
Next item, John. Any questions on line 34?
Madam Chairman, the next item, line 35, 9B, we also had a discussion at the last meeting. This is a request for our behavioral health Medicaid program, $2.6 million in general funds, $3.5 million in federal funds. This is Medicaid costs above our projected expenditures for FY 2005. This is primarily caused, Madam Chairman, by the expenditure growth in our residential psychiatric treatment center programs, particularly our out-of-state placements. The RPTCs, as they're called, is the fastest growing part of this particular budget. And I think Mr. Hogan was online a few days ago and explained some of the programmatic issues about this particular request. But again, this is above, this request is for those costs above what we have budgeted currently.
Mm-hmm. And that's due to additional days plus additional numbers of applicants or people eligible for this?
Yes, Madam Chairman. We're taking a look at all of the causes for these increases. It is increase in the number of individuals in these placements, as well as we're seeing an increase in the length of stay of the children who are in out-of-state placement. Again, I think we had a conversation with Mr. Hogan last week, about this particular issue.
And is the daily rate stayed somewhat consistent, or is it gone up, risen?
I'm sorry, Madam Chairman, I didn't hear
that. The daily rate, the rate charged per day.
Madam Chairman, we have seen some changes in the daily rate, but they have remained relatively flat. The rates don't account for the significant increase.
Any questions? Next item.
Madam Chairman, the next item is item number 36. Again, Dr. Morrison was here last week when we talked about this particular item. This is a delete add supplemental increase for the breast and cervical health check program, a replacement of $500,000 in general funds and from $500,000 in lost federal funds. When the budget was closed out last May, we were not aware that these federal funds would be reduced, and it would have necessitated us to restrict the number of women from the current 7,400 who are enrolled to 5,600 with these lost federal funds. In the backup on 9C, we provided some charts to show you the increased number of women screened in this program. And so we're asking for restoration of these funds so we don't have to eliminate any women from the screening that they get.
This is called the screening program. What besides screening does this pay for?
Madam Chairman, I'd have to get back to you on that particular item. Again, Dr. Monsager is not here, and he's the expert on the program aspects of this. We know it pays for mammograms and diagnostic analysis of that, but I don't know any other. I'd have to get more information for you.
Well, I didn't know that the screening program was broken out separately from the rest of this program as far as funding goes. Because the screening program is the gate to get into the free health coverage for these women.
The screening program is a separate program and has been funded 100% with federal funds for a number of years. It's separate from the Medicaid part of the program. You're right. This is correct. This is the gate to get access to Medicaid if you're eligible for the actual treatment. But this is a separate program from that part of the Medicaid program.
Where is the shortfall in the Medicaid component of this shown up in this supplemental? Or the continuing treatment?
Madam Chairman, it's showing up in our growth projections in the next item in healthcare services. That's where it would show up. Madam Chairman, I've been given information. The basic screening examination includes a clinical breast examination, a mammogram, and a pap smear. And then if a woman has abnormalities requiring follow-up to rule out or diagnose cancer, they're then provided within that enrollment year. So this program provides those three basic things.
And what happened to that federal funding?
Madam Chairman, I know that we were notified that our grant award was reduced. I don't know what led to that particular reduction.
Okay. Thank you. Next item. Are there any questions? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. What's planned for the fiscal year after next, assuming that the federal funds is the grant going to be renewed? Is it going to be dropped altogether?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, in the governor's budget request, we have requested restoration of those funds. If that's not forthcoming, I believe what I've heard Dr. Monsager and his staff testify to is that what they'll do is restrict the screening program probably to women over 55, which is the mandatory service age. Right now, the Alaska program is anyone over age 18. So we'd restrict the number of women that way, by age.
One last question, Madam Chairman. If somebody has a suspicious lesion on the mammogram, and you're going in to do a biopsy of it, is that covered under the screening as well?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, I don't know if it'd be covered under this program or if it would then be covered under the Medicaid program. I'd have to check that out for you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Next item.
The next item, Madam Chairman, is a request in our healthcare services Medicaid program for $13.8 million in general funds, $16.9 million in federal funds. This is due to our inability to accomplish our budget goals from the previous fiscal year. In FY05, we brought to the legislature for this particular budget a total of $41.5 million of cost containment and refinancing items that we believed we could put into place. It was a very aggressive package of cost containment. We've been able to accomplish those budget goals. We've been able to implement about $11 million of that total cost containment package. In the backup, we provided those areas where we've been unsuccessful in implementing some of those proposed reductions. There are two big items, Madam Chairman, that I'd like to focus on that make up most of this the supplemental that we've been unable to accomplish. The first one is that we had proposed that we could save $11 million in total funds from reducing transportation costs in the Medicaid program. Due to delays in putting out a separate RFP, as well as a decision to link our efforts with the state travel office, we have not been able to save the $11 million in FY05. We probably will save significantly less than that in FY05. It does appear that we will save some amount, and we're looking at those savings estimates from the state travel office on a monthly basis, and we can revise that at that time if we need to. The second item, Madam Chairman, is that we had proposed that we would save $20 million from implementing the preferred drug list. We are now projecting we'll save about $8.4 million. The bulk of the reason that we haven't been able to save as much on the preferred drug list is we've made a decision not to implement the behavioral health drugs that were somewhat controversial on a preferred drug list. So we're not going to include those on a preferred drug list. And that means that we have a $12 million hole, Madam Chairman, we haven't been able to fill. There were a number of other items that are listed in the backup, but those were the two large items. So unless there are questions, those are the ones I want to focus on today.
Senator Hoffman.
Well, I think I recall this item last year. And I thought that the cost containments that you're talking about were aggressive, and I suggested that we had revised those. And now you said that your cost containments were going to be $41.5 million, but you're only able to get 11 million of those cost containments. That leaves you short by $30 million. I would say that not even only achieving 25% of those goals is a far cry from good management. And I guess my question is the delays in your RFP, particularly on your block, your proposal to purchase block tickets. Where does that RFP stand today?
Through the Chair, Senator Hoffman, rather than do a separate RFP, the Medicaid program has joined with the state travel office that's being managed by the Department of Administration. January 1st, Medicaid came under the state travel office, and so we are seeing some savings starting January 1st, but it's not as much as we originally believed we could save. And again, we're tracking that on a monthly basis.
And then, if I might continue, Madam Chair, of this $30 million, you don't anticipate any savings by switching to the state travel office in the next 4 months?
Through the Chair, Senator Hoffman, yes, we do. However, the time we put the supplemental request together, we hadn't seen any of those savings, so we will be, as I said, monitoring that on a monthly basis. We have the first month worth of data. and coming back to the legislature with a change to that request.
Well, again, I guess I'd just like to comment that I felt the proposal that the department had on cost savings measures of $41.5 million was aggressive, but I didn't believe that they would only be able to accomplish $11 million. At least I figured that they would be able to accomplish $50 million, and that's why I think that I made amendments at this table to reduce the optimism of the department on the $41 million in savings. But I guess I'm a little bit disappointed in them not only reaching 25% of their goals of cost savings, particularly when we're talking of $30 million at this juncture.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Senator Olson, did you have your hand up?
Actually, I didn't, Madam Chairman, if I could. You talked about the preferred drug list, the generic drugs that are out there that were going to be purchased in bulk, but you've kind of excluded the psychotropic drugs. What percentage of the total drug expenditures are towards psychotropic drugs as opposed to other drugs that are out there?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, I believe it's about one-third, but Mr. Peoples is online in Anchorage, and Dwayne, if you're there, did you have a question?
For the record, my name is Dwayne Peoples, Division of Healthcare Services. The answer is correct. It's between 25 and 30%.
That answer your question?
Yes.
Thank you, Senator Olson.
The next item, Madam Chairman, is another request for part of the Medicaid program for our Senior and Disability Services Medicaid. The request is for $22.6 million in general funds and $30.5 million in federal funds. This request is made up of two items. Senator Hoffman, you'll be happy to know we did a little bit better on cost containment in this particular area than the other area. The first is unrealizable FY05 cost containment of $7.1 million in general funds and $9.6 million in federal funds. We had, for our Senior and Disability Services Medicaid program, put before the legislature $48.5 million of cost containment and refinancing for our Senior Services Medicaid program. We believe we're going to accomplish, or we're on track to accomplish $32 million of that, or about two-thirds of that. We're coming back to the legislature for $16.7 million in total funds of areas that we have not been able to implement savings yet in this Senior and Disability Services area. The other part of the requested supplemental is for continued formula growth above projections, again, particularly for our personal care attendant program. And this program continues to grow significantly above all of our estimates. And as of yet, while we've implemented some audits of providers in the personal care attendant program, we have not seen a real change in the pattern. If anything, I know in January we had our highest month yet in the personal care attendant program of $7.4 million. So we're coming back to the legislature with the supplemental request made up of two parts. We also expect in our subcommittee to have significant discussions about the policy choices of how we go about containing costs for the personal care attendant program. And certainly, we are collecting information from other states on their eligibility criteria, and we'll be providing that certainly in our subcommittee discussions, Madam Chairman, because it's very interesting to see what other states have done that Alaska hasn't done yet in our regulations.
Senator Dyson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Janet, I remember Commissioner Gilbertson being concerned about this a year ago. And as I remember the discussion, everybody realizes that it's great advantage to keep disabled and seniors in their home as long as possible and reduce the cost and the inconvenience and the lack of all kinds of things of being institutionalized in a home. I thought the criteria for using the personal care attendants was that the person had to be, would have to have qualified to go into a home in order to get the supplement to get services to stay in their own dwelling. Did I miss something or?
Through the chair, Senator Dyson, as I've learned more and more about this program, one part of our regulations say that you have to meet an institutional level of care.
Right.
That's correct. However, another part of our regulations say you only have to have one deficiency in, and Mr. Ashman is here because I get the terms confused.
Mr. Ashman, please join us.
So why don't you help me out, Steve? It's one deficiency in an activity of daily living to qualify.
For the record, my name is Steve Ashman, the Director of Senior and Disability Services. The first part of the regulations on the personal care attendant program, in your introduction, state that the client would normally need services of an acute care, a hospital, if you will. When you get into the program eligibility portion of the regulations, it simply states that they have to have a deficiency in one activity of daily living, such as bathing, dressing, meal preparation.
Okay, so...
Would you like to follow up on that?
If I may.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Because that's regulation, you don't need our help to change the regulations, to institute whatever policies you all collectively think are the best use of public resources. So why haven't you all done whatever you professionally think is necessary to control the costs at whatever level you think is appropriate?
Through the chair to Senator Dyson, there were a couple of reasons that we've not gone out with regulations. We had rather aggressive regulations that we put into effect late last fiscal year and the beginning of this fiscal year. There was a substantial outcry on the part of consumers, providers, and family members that we had to deal with for several months. We had other regulatory projects going on, and we also, one of the things that we wanted to do was get in and have some audits conducted of the PCA program to help us determine what types of changes should be made to help contain those costs. Those audits are still continuing.
So, if I may, what I hear you saying is you're moving down the direction of making some decisions about kind of the triage or the policies, but you need more data.
Through the chair to Senator Dyson, that is correct, and we'd welcome any participation or insight.
All right, so my guess is that most of us will say to you what we want is... we don't want people abusing it because people have a family duty to take care of their loved ones, period. And the only time we want them to be subsidized is when they would be unable to fulfill that family responsibility without a subsidy. You know, so the relative, child, whatever, neighbor couldn't take time off from another job that they've got to have in order to care for the person that needs it, so some subsidy is necessary. And maybe you all agree with that or don't, but what's the timeline for you guys getting your data and getting your act together and making the decision about what's the cut lines for the subsidies?
Through the chair to Senator Dyson, the audits should be completed in mid-March, and we'll have we have some preliminary information and some findings there, along with some previous audits that we have done. But the audits won't be completed until mid-March, at the earliest.
But Madam Chairman, Senator Dyson, we also want to make sure that we're moving in the direction that the legislature wants us to move in, and not just cutting areas that we're going to hear from you later about. So I think in our subcommittee discussions, we are going to talk about what other states are doing in the personal care attendant program, and as well as looking at the preliminary information about audits. So we want to make sure that we really are aligned with the legislature on this one before we step in and do things.
And if I just make one final comment.
Yeah, Counselor.
And the chairman of that committee is very experienced, and I'm sure, but I will, quite a few budget decisions will be made before you get your audit back and go through whatever process to vet the audit and decide what it tells you and come up with your decisions. As soon as the audit is out, I would like you to get a copy to the Senate Hess Committee, and I would, as soon as you're ready, I would enjoy a hearing on this issue, what you understand and what you recommend. And there are several citizen groups that have a dog in this fight, we'll invite them to it. But the only way for the legislature to tell you what the legislature wants is either we to pass a law, a resolution, or give you an indication with funding, you know. And you need to be clear to us where you want direction. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Would the report and audit result in changes to regulation or to statute?
Madam Chair, the statutes for the personal care attendant program simply authorize it as an optional Medicaid service. And that's all the statutes say, is that it is an allowable option.
So it can be handled through regulation. Senator Bundy?
Just wanted to sympathize a little bit. We go to change a system that has provided a subsidy for benefit for folks. Change doesn't come easy for anyone, and when they've been asked to justify or reduce their dependence on the state, you hear the same thing we hear, but I just wanted you to know that at least this legislature will back you in making these difficult decisions. Won't be calling you because some constituent now has to bear the brunt of the difficult decisions you have to make. So it's not just enough reason for public policy that someone is going to complain.
Thank you, Senator.
Jen, if you will, let's go on over. That concludes the fast track.
It does.
Let's go on over to the supplemental.
One comment, I guess.
Hoffman, excuse me.
On both those two items, item 9C and 9D, they total some little under $95 million that the department has missed its target by. And it says here, you know, and I think everyone at this table realizes that's a substantial amount of money and a big, really huge miss on that target. And in reading the information here, it says that that the items were that the cost containments weren't being able to be implemented in time. And my question, I guess, is are those measures going to be implemented so that you're going to be able to meet those targets in next year's budget?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, some of them we certainly have and will. Some of them we are not. For example, one of the items that we had reduced in the FY05 budget was approximately, I think, $4 million for nursing homes and pre-admission care plans. In other words, we were going to stop folks from going into expensive nursing homes. And we did that, I think, successfully. But as I heard Mr. Ashman say, and as Senator Hoffman is pointing out, we ended on that particular one. What we failed to consider is that if you don't close that nursing home bed, then someone else is going to come into that bed. So that is one that we're just not going to achieve the savings. The whole logic was flawed in our ability to think that we could achieve some savings. So there are some of those, Senator Hoffman, relating to level of care plans and reassessing some of the waiver clients we're going to be able to achieve, but there are a couple that we're just not going to be able to.
Okay, what would be the target then, if I might continue, of the $94 million that we missed last year? Are you going to say that you're going to be able to hit $75 million of that target next year?
Well, Senator Hoffman, I think what you're doing is adding the $48.5 million and the $41 million, that's about $90 million of cost containment items we had anticipated doing. We've accomplished about $41 million of that in the current year. We're not asking for that replacement.
But items D and E total, if you take federal funds and general funds, that totals $93 million.
Yes, Senator Hoffman, a large portion of item 9E has nothing to do with our cost containment efforts. It's growth even above what we projected last year for our personal care attendant program that wasn't budgeted. So that's a big portion of that particular item.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
We'll take a brief at ease, please.
Please come back to order. Apologies for being late. Thank you, Senator Green. I had a build out of judiciary, and we crammed 15 minutes of work into an hour. We had a good discussion, and the bill passed out. So thanks for your patience. So I think I know where we are. We finished the fast track, and so we're going to have Health and Social Services stay at the table with us and pick up the regular track, starting with 85, and Janet will walk through these with you, and then we'll go back and start at the top of the page with administration and work on that until about 10:45. So if that's all right for a schedule, let's go to the regular track and go to 8A, which is substance abuse prevention. Janet?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask Diane Casto to come to the table. Lines 85, 86, and 87 are very similar, so if you don't mind, I'd like to talk about those all together. What you're seeing in lines 85, 86, and 87 is a substance abuse prevention initiative where the governor is proposing using some of the FY05 windfall funds to initiate substance abuse prevention for adolescents and children in a prevention mode. In Alaska, we have not taken this approach to really invest in looking at substance abuse prevention for this age group. And this is an effort to get ahead of the problem rather than focusing on the downstream costs, but to look at prevention initiatives that are evidence-based, that are supported by the federal government and other states, and propose those for implementation in Alaska. And Ms. Casto can talk about the individual proposals that we have.
Morning.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Diane Casto. I'm the manager for Prevention and Early Intervention Services with the Division of Behavioral Health. What we have outlined, and as Janet has pointed out, substance abuse, as all of you know, is a huge problem for the state of Alaska. It also impacts a number of our other social service issues, such as child abuse, domestic violence, school dropout rates. The list can go on and on. There are many, many issues that are impacted by the alcohol use within the state of Alaska. Through this initiative, our goal and our hope is to begin looking at all of these issues in a more comprehensive, holistic approach, and to begin looking over the lifespan of how can we start impacting our children and our families earlier, how can we start helping our communities take a more active role at what they can do to start working towards reduction of substance use in their communities. This includes tobacco, alcohol, marijuana, other drugs, inhalants, all of those things, prescription drug abuse, which is a huge issue that is rising both here in Alaska as well as nationwide. And the approach is to start early, to start with some programs that are for very young children and their families, in building resiliency, in building good self-esteem, in how do we help parents and those children develop the things that they need within their home, within their community, to resist the attraction of alcohol and drug abuse. We then move into and want to start working more with our younger children. As we know, alcohol and drug use is, unfortunately, the rate of onset of when children start using alcohol and drugs is dropping, and younger. We now have many children, 12, 13 years old, who are actively using alcohol and drugs, which is a serious issue. And we need to start addressing that earlier. We also have research that tells us that if we can encourage youth to stop, to not use drugs early on, that the later we can push the onset of their first use up in their age, the more likely they are to not have an alcohol and or drug abuse problem later in their life. So working with our children from 10, 11, 12, in those ages, to get them to not start earlier or to not start using drugs at an early age, hopefully will increase our ability to keep them from having alcohol and drug abuse problems down the road. Then we want to move in and work more closely with our adolescents, high school and college age youth, and really have them begin taking a leadership role. We also know that youth listen to youth more than they listen to us adults. I know that from my own children. They often listen to their peers much more than they listen to me, although I try. So I think one of the things we want to do is to get our youth more active in taking a strong role and keeping them at the table, so that when, instead of all the adults always making the decisions about what is the right way to go in moving our prevention initiatives forward, let's get the youth involved and let them start taking a leadership role and helping mentor their peers. So those are kind of the three main programs of looking at very young children, at middle-aged children, and at youth. We then want to make sure that we're looking, again, more holistically at identifying some of those high-risk populations. For instance, within our substance abuse treatment programs, most of the people who are in substance abuse treatment are parents. And we also know from research that parents or that alcohol and drug use is often a generational thing. So that if we have parents and children in drug treatment programs, we need to be putting more emphasis on working with those children to help them break that cycle of generational alcohol and drug use. What else? Okay. Two other issues that we are would like to focus on with this initiative. One is a very comprehensive, multi-pronged, multi-strategy media approach to start changing the norms about alcohol and drugs in the state of Alaska. I think one thing that we know is that media does play a very strong role with our youth. They do watch a lot of television. They listen to the radio. They do see the media. We also know that parents are impacted by the media. But we have to have a multi-strategy approach. Just one message is not the way to go. But to start getting information out there that will start changing the norm about alcohol. I think one of the things that we know also about alcohol and drug use, particularly of parents of teenagers, and we hear this all the time, is, oh, thank goodness my child only was drinking alcohol and they weren't using other drugs. Well, we need to start changing that attitude about the norms of alcohol and drug use, and how can we start making sure that all of these alcohol and drug opportunities are not seen as positive or better than the other one. So we'd like to really take a strong approach of using nationally produced media as well as doing some local Alaskanized programs that can start focusing on changing the public norm about alcohol and drug use. And then the final issue that we are going to look at is how can we do a better job of supporting communities that would like to look at local options, of making choices for their own communities about the use and sale of alcohol in their community. And in the state of Alaska, we have many communities who have made choices and have made legislative change to disallow the sale of alcohol or the consumption of alcohol in their community. We have wet communities, damp communities, dry communities. And through this initiative, we would like to help communities find the way to move forward. Many communities want to take this action, but it's a very difficult road because there are always going to be people who don't want to give up that right to have alcohol in their communities. So this would be an opportunity to have a more comprehensive program, bring all the players to the table. Public safety is involved in the local options. Community and Regional Affairs is now
Commerce
and Economic Development, thank you. I'm still in the old days. That's right, they've added a C, community. They are involved in this process, Department of Law, Department of Health and Social Services. So what we would like to do with this is to get all of us at the table, really talk about how we can develop a more comprehensive and focused approach to the local options issue.
All right, questions of Ms. Castro, Senator Bundy, and Senator Olson, Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First, thank you for your work. And then I have two questions. In all three items, you were talking about Alaska's kids are safe and healthy, and I think something we all want. My question is, with the age of use going down, how do we judge success for any of these programs? And the other question for you, I suppose, Mr. Chairman, is why is this in the supplemental? And that should be an ongoing.
We'll take on question one first.
Thank you. Through the chair, Senator Bundy. One of the things, as Janet pointed out, that we are looking to begin implementing more fully in the state of Alaska are what we call evidence-based programs. And there are a number of prevention programs, quite a few actually, that have gone through rigorous evaluation and research to document that they are able to start making a difference in drug use, particularly among youth. These are programs that have been approved by the Federal Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, as well as some through the Department of Education, Federal Department of Education, Department of Justice, some various programs. One of the things we're doing through our RFPs, our request for proposals for all community grants, is working with the communities to make sure they're starting to use either a spin-off of these actual model programs that have shown to be effective, or to at least use the concepts that have been tested so that we know that the programs that we are implementing are ones that have evidence and research behind them. Now, with that said, how do we then show that they're making a change in our own communities and in our own state? That is always the challenge of keeping kind of the fidelity of these evidence-based programs. But we are working very closely with all of our grantees. We're providing much more technical assistance on the issue of evaluation outcome measures, trying to help our programs move away from counting widgets, you know, how many programs did we offer, how many people came, but when they came to those programs, what was the outcome? What was the change? So we're working very closely with our community grantees to make sure all of their programs have evaluation components within them. Then the other things that we do have is we have a number of statewide surveys that take place on a regular basis that can help us track those things. One of those is the Youth Risk Behavior Survey, the YRBS. And in the last survey that we did, which was 2003, we actually are now starting to see some decrease in youth use of various drugs and alcohol. It's not huge decreases at this point, but the trend is starting to go down. And I think we're at that point where if we can keep the momentum going, that I think through some of these surveys we will begin to see change within the state as well as in the communities.
I would guess that as you go through the budget subcommittees, there will be quite an emphasis on missions and measures, and those measures will continue to be addressed.
And to Senator Bundy's second question, This is '05 windfall money with an '06 lapse date. Traditionally, this would be found in the '06 budget, would it not be for the '05 windfall money? My question then is, would we expect then that this initiative would die at the end of '06, or is this a $4.5 million ongoing expenditure that we would be expected to fund next year at this time?
Mr. Chairman, our expectation is it would be ongoing, yes.
To that, oh, this, yeah, before I ask my question, Senator Olson, then Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Actually, that wasn't my question. I see that this is a very successful program, certainly one we want to go ahead and back, as well as the local option laws that are out there. I don't understand why it can't, why it couldn't wait till the next budget cycle, but the question was already asked.
Senator Stedman?
Mr. Chairman, I basically had the same point. It appears, you know, to be a '06 item, and quite frankly, I didn't hear a whole lot of discussion about timing of the implementation now versus in June for the next budget, but clearly, we were just hit with huge numbers about 20 minutes ago to a tune of about $85 million, rounded off, and I'm not so sure that we shouldn't try to have the things that belong in the '06 budget in the '06 budget.
I think that as we march through this, we'll see this funding vehicle or funding mechanism spread throughout the supplementals, so it's a creature of the times. It's a creature of good times, which sometimes creates problems for us, so that's the kind of problems we like to have. Other questions? Oh, Senator Green?
I'd just like to know if any funds have been expended towards these 8A, 8B, and 8C?
Through the chair, Senator Green, no.
These are three new programs, or it encompasses new programs in every case?
Through the chair, yes.
Thank you.
Okay, Senator Bundy?
Mr. Chairman, it's forgiven old speech teacher's habits, but it's hard for me to define a temporary change in cash flow as a windfall when we're $5.5 billion in debt to the CBR.
Thank you for that provocative thought. Thank you, Senator Bundy. I have a couple of questions, and we perhaps don't have to spend the time to answer them. I have great concerns over this request. I think all of us are concerned about instituting new programs in times of good times that we have to support when things are going to be not quite so easy for us, and I think this is probably a poster child of that initiative or that concern. So to that end, I'd like to know from the department how this initiative, this effort of $4.5 million, difference from existing programs that we currently have. And then I'd also like to know how much is spent in our budget on alcohol-related items. And you don't have to do all the math now, but I'm just wondering if another $4 million really makes that much difference, and whether we can sustain that $4 million in future years. So, those are my concerns. Any others on this item, 8A, B, or C?
Okay. Mr. Chairman, we will get that information for you. My understanding is that what we spend on prevention, substance abuse prevention, I believe from state funds is less than $1 million in our current budget, but we'll get you the detail.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. I guess $1 million won't surprise me. So, but that's why we asked the question. So, okay. Anything else on A, B, and C, Senator Stedman?
I have one quick comment, Mr. Chairman. Just looking at the summary here, you know, where we get into the 06 lapse dates, I'm not so sure that that's not kind of misleading, that there shouldn't be some note in here that the projection is to have it ongoing. Because just looking at this casually, you would think it would be a one-year program.
All right. Other comments, questions? Okay, let's move on then to 8D.
8D, Mr. Chairman, item number 8 is a request for juvenile justice probation services for $194,100. This is a request to pay for court-ordered costs that we've incurred and expect to incur in FY05. a few years ago, I think in the FY 2003 budget, we had an item in our budget for $500,000 for court-ordered costs. The legislature cut that and requested that we come back annually with a supplemental for the actual cost. I think the feeling was we weren't spending that amount every year and that the legislature preferred to pay the actual cost rather than an estimate in the budget. So that is what this annual request is for.
This is akin perhaps to a ratification more than appropriation.
Or similar to a judgments and claims, sure. I think.
Okay. Yes. Right. Any questions on line 88, 8B? Okay. Janet, 89?
Yes, Madam Chair, Mr. Chairman, the next item, 89 and 90, this is where we're returning general funds and making them available to offset the cost of the supplemental. We have two items. The first one is a reduction of $2,038,800 in our public assistance program, in our adult public assistance program. This has been one program that has been growing at about 5% a year for a number of years. 2 years ago, we initiated some changes in our whole cost containment efforts, and they have proven to be more effective than we anticipated. We're actually seeing a change in the growth of the adult public assistance program from less than 5% to more like 3%. And so in doing so, we're able to come back to the legislature to say that we don't need this $2 million of general funds in the current year. The second item is in our general relief assistance program. Basically, we're over budgeted in that program as well, and so we're giving up $185,000 in general funds in the supplemental.
Any questions? Other than why not more? All right.
Let's see the tribe increase.
Thank you, Janet, for that. All right, 91, 8F.
Mr. Chairman, 91 is a new program, again, spending the FY05 windfall. Normally, you would not see this in a supplemental program or supplemental budget. This is initiating a new grant program called the Basic Grants. These grants are Building Alaska Through Successful Initiatives in Communities. These grants would be statewide and would fund some of the most basic needs as the department has had requests from many communities, from food banks, for shelter, or for other areas in different communities. One particular example of this that comes to mind is this November in Anchorage, there was a shortfall in the food banks being able to get enough donated turkeys for the Thanksgiving holiday. They were very short in that and came to the state requesting funding for that. This is that particular grant program would be available for that kind of service. But again, Mr. Chairman, it is a new program, very similar to the substance abuse program. We haven't offered this kind of grant program before.
Okay. And expect it to continue on beyond 06?
Yes.
Okay. Senator Bundy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, it seems like we have a fairly substantial welfare system now. Why come up with a new program and the additional administrative costs instead of just put them on the current welfare system?
Through the Chair, Senator Bundy, what we've actually seen is an increase in the need in food banks in particular, that our individual welfare system has not been addressing. As you also know, our temporary assistance program is temporary. It has a 16-month time limit, and we've seen significant caseload reduction in that program. This is basically for community efforts, for communities to give them some assistance to help take care of those who wouldn't qualify for any other kind of assistance.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the key word is community, and perhaps we ought not to rob them of the opportunity to do this.
Questions or comments on 8F? All right. Janet, 92, 8G.
Mr. Chairman, 8G is a request for $122,100 to fund the Governor's Advisory Council on Faith-Based and Community Initiatives. The Governor, through Administrative Order Number 221, established the Governor's Advisory Council on Faith-Based and Community Initiatives. To get the office and the council up and running, four departments participated in providing funding to establish the council: Department of Health and Social Services, Military and Veterans Affairs, Corrections, and Labor. This request of $122,100 would pay back the departments for their contribution, except it would not pay back Health and Social Services. We would eat that portion of our share of establishing the council. So this supplemental would actually go back to other departments to pay their contributions back.
Questions? Senator Green?
Would you repeat those departments again?
Military and Veterans Affairs, Corrections, and Labor.
And HESS.
And HESS. Okay. But we're only asking for the funds. HESS is going to eat their share of it. We're not asking for supplemental for that, but we are asking for the other three departments.
Is my understanding the administrative order had a zero fiscal note?
Through the chair, Senator Green, I'm not sure. I haven't seen that order in a while. I'd have to look at that.
Do you know how many people have, Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead, please.
How many people have been hired for this council?
Three.
And what is the, Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead, please.
What is the amount in the 06 budget, to my memory?
If you wait a minute, I can look it up. It's about 400 and some thousand.
Mm-hmm. 420,000. Mr. Chairman, if I could continue. And how much did this cost last year?
Through the chair, Senator Green, this is a new council. It was not in last year's budget. Madam Chairman, I'm not finding the component in the budget, so I'll have to get back to you on
this. Okay, that's fine. We can find it. I recall there's some people from my community on the faith-based group that we're doing. I've been working for a year and a half.
Through the chair, Senator Green, that must be a different group because this is the council established by this administrative order.
And what did the administrative order actually do? I don't think we've ever seen it.
I can get a copy to the committee.
Senator Green, approximate answer to your questions. In 06 is another 300,000, a little over 300,000. Other questions?
Mr. Chairman, just like the previous item, at what point does this no longer then become a local faith base or a community operation and just becomes another state operation?
Janet, what happens if we don't approve this expenditure?
Mr. Chairman, I expect that the other departments will have to absorb those costs within their regular budgets.
And you've been, HESS has been using TANF dollars to do your part?
Yes.
Okay, other questions? Senator Green?
All right, could we just do a direct appropriation to HESS, Labor, DMVA, and Corrections for their share?
To backfill their current expenditures?
There.
I think so.
Thank you.
Senator Dyson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jenny? Are there no federal monies available to subsidize this kind of coordinating effort for the faith-based initiative?
Through the chair, Senator Dyson, the chairman mentioned, we are using some of our federal TANF dollars to subsidize, but I'm not aware of any other federal grants to subsidize the establishment of a council like this. But we will continue to look at that.
Thank you. And are there currently people on staff, bodies on staff, working on this?
Mr. Chairman, we have hired the head of the council, yes.
What?
We've hired the head of the council.
Oh, head.
Yes. So we've hired one position.
And two more would be contemplated if this, the full funding in 05 and 06 went through?
That's correct.
Okay, other questions on faith-based? All right, thank you, Janet. Let's move on to 93-8H, your last one.
93 is a request for $150,000 for the Bureau of Vital Statistics to cover lease costs that has been subsidized for a couple of years. The Bureau of Vital Statistics is generating $150,000 more in receipt-supported services than they currently have budgeted. In the last couple of years, we've been able to absorb some of their additional lease costs through other reductions in the department's budget. However, this year we're not able to absorb that lease cost, and so we've come to the legislature for a supplemental request for the additional receipt supportive services. We also have a budget amendment for the FY06 equivalent cost for the same thing.
Questions? Okay, seeing none. Janet, are there any that we've missed?
There's one on 19A, 100, it's number 151.
Line number 151. Okay, 19A ratifications, okay.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, this is a ratification for FY03 for Medicaid services. We had budgeted an expected amount of statutory designated program receipts that we thought we would earn from our Medicaid Fair Share program. We didn't earn the statutory designated program receipts. Our budget estimate had been that we would earn $55 million, and the total came in at about $42 million, so we're $13 million under of our statutory designated program receipt. So this is a ratification for FY03. In FY02, we had a $22 million ratification. I'll tell you, in FY04, we don't have one, so we've made slow, steady progress.
And we have that on the record. So for next year, we'll remember that.
And I can say that because FY04 is complete, Mr. Chairman.
Right. Okay, any questions on 19A ratifications? Any further questions on health and social services? Thank you, Janet, for your help and for your work. Okay, let's then go back to the top of the page and alphabetically and start with administration. On the regular track, that should be page 4, line 68. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Eric Swanson.
Let's get the books back.
Sure.
To the first section on the regular track. So give me just a moment here. Okay, everybody there? Eric, if you will, please.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Eric Swanson. I'm the Administrative Services Director for the Department of Administration. In Section 1A, which is line 68 on the spreadsheet, our first request is for $76,100 of statutory designated program receipts. These funds are monies we receive as a revenue from our state credit card program managed by the Division of Finance with the First National Bank of Anchorage. First National Bank of Alaska. We have currently budgeted $112,500 for these rebates, but because of growth in the credit card program and also more favorable rebate terms, we've actually received in excess of that amount in this current fiscal year. In fact, I believe we just received the rebate check that totaled $188,600. And we would like to be able to raise the difference between what we had in the budget and what we received to help us to maintain staffing in the Division of Finance for the credit card maintenance of the credit card program.
Okay. Questions on the rebate? Senator Green?
Is there any
kind of understanding or thought that generally these rebates go back to the original fund source, which I think was federal receipts. Is that a requirement?
Through the chair, Senator Green, there are all other fund sources that are involved in paying through the credit card program that help to result in the rebate. Some of those monies are federal funds, and there. I was just advised this morning that that there is a there could be a cost allowability issue with the federal government if we didn't put the proceeds of the rebate back into maintaining the credit card program. Again, I just talked about this morning, so I'm not I haven't had a chance to look at this in depth, but that's my understanding.
Because we, Mr. Chair, we want to be sure that any audit conducted would say this was running like it's supposed to be and that it meets all the criteria, so I think we need to red flag this to be sure. And what about the use of statutory designated program receipts in a supplemental? Is there any prohibition on that?
Through the chair, Senator Green, I'm not aware of any. I believe that we actually had a similar request in last year's supplemental where the the credit card rebate program was increasing slowly, and I think we had a small but similar request last year that was approved.
Because, you know, if that statutory designated program receipt actually just equate to GF, I mean, we call it SPDR, but it's...
Well, through the chair, Senator Green, I believe that if the legislature did not approve our request, that the funds would go back into the general fund. But again, then we'd have this issue of the federal cost allowability, and I would need to get back to you on just what that would mean if we weren't if we weren't able to do that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Eric, this is 04 rebate, and what was the money used for to when the rebate came back to the state? Has the money been expended, and for what reasons?
Mr. Chairman, the funds were expended in the Division of Finance in support of the credit card program, maintaining the credit card program there. There are several staff members that that work on that, so it'll be a portion of their salaries.
And what, if any, money was used for the statewide travel office?
Through the chair, we did, at the end of last year, use a portion of the rebate to purchase some travel office software. My understanding of this in the current year was that none of this funding would be used directly for the travel office.
So if I read that the software for the travel office was over $317,000 and the rebate paid for half of that, would that be correct?
That's my recollection, Mr. Chairman. Yeah.
So far we should keep a running tab on the statewide travel office. We're up to $317,000 so far, and we still have 2 months to go. But that's a different issue. Okay, let's see, anything else on the credit card rebate? With Senator Green's question, we'll follow through on that. Okay, Eric.
Mr. Chairman, next item is section 1B. It's row 69 on the spreadsheet. Here we're requesting $125,000 of receipt-supported services for the Division of Motor Vehicles. Mr. Chairman, the costs of deploying the new digital driver's license system, and in particular costs of the consumables, that is the materials that we use to produce the license, have been somewhat higher in this first year than we had anticipated. Part of the reason for that is that we did underestimate the cost of the consumables just a little bit for the first year, and we've also experienced an increased demand for the new digital driver's license. So the combination of those two things has put that budget just a little bit higher than what we had initially anticipated.
Mr. Bannock's with us today. We'd like to hear from him. Dwayne, did you travel to visit with us this morning? Just here for questions. give us the 1 minute on what Eric just said. Senator Bundy?
Well, I just thank you, Mr. Chairman. The question is as to, in many programs, we're trying to break even and do the cost of renewal or issue a new license come close to breaking even the cost of issuing the license?
Well, through Chair Senator Bundy, I guess what I would say there is that this is a bit of a spike in the first year, although we believe that we can manage this going forward without additional funding. So hopefully from that perspective it's a break-even
Dwayne, you have 1 minute from DMV for us?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Dwayne Bannock. I'm proud to be here with the Division of Motor Vehicles this morning. There's 2 points on this particular matter pertaining, Mr. Swanson's exactly correct. It has to do with the cost of production of our new digital driver's license. When the costs were originally set up for this versus the costs that we're paying today, there were some security features that we considered to be noticeably deficient in the original proposal. As a result of building these security features into our inventory, the cost of the inventory has gone up. And secondly, because it is a new program that requires a physical inventory, not only do we have the first full year of production of this license, but we also had to stock not only our warehouse, but I have 37 offices statewide as well to carry over the inventory. So in essence, this is I hesitate to use this word forward funding a little bit, but from an inventory point of view, I couldn't completely run out of zero and then order again.
Thank you, Dwayne. Questions on this, Senator Green?
Does the division have the ability to adjust the cost for this if you need to, or does it require legislation?
Through the chair, Senator Green, the cost, you mean the price that we charge the customer?
Right.
That is by statute, ma'am.
Okay, thank you. Do you need any statute revision?
That is not my recommendation, Senator.
Okay, thank you. Okay.
And Dwayne, you're still giving us $40 million more than you cost us?
Yes, sir, that is correct. Thank you very much.
You're always welcome at this table, sir. Actually, Mr. Chairman, I think the difference is about $30 million, but it's still substantial.
Well, it's got a plus in front of it.
Yeah, there you go.
That's the part we like. Thanks for joining us this morning, Dwayne.
Thank you for your time.
Anything else on motor vehicles? Eric, 71C. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Line 70 is a request of $600,000 for the cost of public advocacy for the current year. $575,000 of that is general fund, and $25,000 is general fund program receipts, which are funds that we receive through the Department of Law Collections for criminal Rule 39 funding. Mr. Chairman, the $600,000 is the projected cost, the difference between what we have in the budget and what we project to be our total cost for the remainder of this fiscal year. If we get this supplemental and spend all of it, we will still be very close in total expenditures in FY05 to what we spent at OPA in 04. It would be about $115,000 more. And given the caseload growth that we've experienced and continue to experience this year, it's pretty flat.
I see Barb Brink in the audience. Barb, anything to add to that?
Actually, Mr. Chairman, I'll ask public advocacy.
Oh, it's Josh Fink.
And I believe he's there.
That's your question, Mr.
Chairman. Hey, thank you, sir. Thanks for being here. We'll get to Barb shortly. So, okay. The question, Senator Green.
Was there a lapse last year when all was said and done?
Through the chair, Senator Green, yes, there was. We actually lapsed a significant portion of the supplemental that that we did get last year. In other words, we did not use the supplemental.
Is that reflected?
It is in comparison that I just gave you. If we take the amount that we spent last year, which was only a portion of the supplemental,
right,
and compare it to what we're asking for total for this year, it would be about $100,000 more this year. And part of the situation last year was our case management system and our ability to project the specific caseload last year was just off. We've done a number of things to improve that. I'm confident that the supplemental requesting this year will every penny of that.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
If I remember right, wasn't the 05 budget, the OPA, was funded at the level that they requested? Was that your question? When we did 05 last year, we funded OPA at 100%, not expecting supplementals, if I remember right.
Mr. Chairman, I believe that the legislature did fund at 100% of the request. That request was less than the total that we had spent in 04, so we had some reason to believe that there could be supplemental funding needed in 05. One of the problems that we face with this agency is it has been difficult over the years for us to project with any real precision just what that caseload is going to be in the coming year, and that's reflected here.
Mr. Chairman, what happens if, I haven't heard anyone say it's not going to be funded, but what happens if this were not funded fully?
Through the chair, Senator Green, I think I would like to defer to Mr. Fink on that question.
Through the chair, Senator Green, If it were not funded, I would have to...
Josh, identify yourself, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Josh Fink, the Director of the Office of Public Advocacy. If it were not funded, I would have to, I'd probably have to shut down the month of June.
Say again, I'm sorry.
I'd probably have to shut the office for the month of June.
The month of June, okay, thank you. Thank you.
Other questions of Mr. Fink? Okay, thank you, Josh, for joining us this morning.
Mr. Chairman.
Move on to 71, Public Defenders.
Mr. Chairman, line 71, for the Public Defender Agency, a similar request as we're looking for PA. In this case, the amount is $887,200 of general fund and $20,000 of statutory designated program receipts. Mr. Chairman, again, the difference or the amount that's being requested here is the difference between what we have currently in the budget and what our projected total costs are for FY 2005. If there is more of an increase if we compare 05 to 04 for the Public Defender Agency, and I think they've experienced a significant caseload growth in this current year. Barbara Brink can address that in some more detail if you're
interested. If you would, please, and just to make sure that I understand, I think OPA and PD were all funded at the full request last year in the OPA budget.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Barbara Brink. I'm the Alaska Public Defender. We were funded fully at the request that was made. Mr. Chairman, the difficulty is, as always, in predicting what our caseload is going to do. I have a chart here of caseload growth from FY 88. As you can see, it's always gone up, but we have been planning routinely for a 1-3% increase in caseload growth. This year, our half-year figures for FY 05 indicate we're experiencing a 9% caseload growth, and there's a couple of easily explainable reasons for that. First of all, the Blakely case was decided by the United States Supreme Court, which held that our sentencing scheme was unconstitutional because we didn't give defendants a jury trial on aggravating factors that increased their sentences. The question that remains open is, how does that apply to the hundreds of people who were sentenced prior to that decision? We have been reappointed over 400 of those cases, old felony cases that we thought we were done with. So that's an immediate influx of a lot of felony level casework that needs to be done. Secondly, these are the most expensive types of cases. Felony cases take a lot more work than misdemeanor cases. We have to devote a lot more resources to the felony cases. The Alaska court system is reporting that for the first 4 months of FY 05, comparing that to the first 4 months of FY 04, their felony filings in Anchorage are up 76%, and we are feeling that pain as well. Frankly, this is probably a reasonable consequence of the fact that last year we funded 9 additional prosecutors, 20 additional state troopers, and 2 additional judges in Kenai and Palmer. You have more arrests, you have more cases, you have more prosecutions, and you have more courtrooms to handle them.
Questions of Ms. Brink? Okay. Anything else on 71, 1B? Okay. Thank you, Barb, for joining us this morning.
Thank you very much.
72, 1E, risk management.
Mr. Chairman, line 72, we're requesting $1,350,000 of general funds to pay 2 major claims that are made against the state, self-insurance, for catastrophic losses that have been incurred. And the 2 incidents that we're referring here today are the damage that was done to the Fairbanks Correctional Facility. We're expecting that could cost very close to $1 million of the deductible that we have on that policy. And then the remainder of the $350,000 would be to cover damage done to the Fast Ferry Fairweather, hull damage experienced here.
Questions? Senator Budde?
In the Fairbanks case, was that the front-end loader experience?
Through the chair, Senator Bunny, that's correct. Apparently, someone attempted a break-in or a breakout of some sort.
Consider it said. I'm just wondering what opportunities there are for recovery. Someone of that ability probably has limited resources, but...
Through the chair, Senator Bundy, I'd have to look for the force manager. I can do that and get back to you.
Hopefully they're aggressively addressing at least his PFD.
Hers.
Then theirs. Senator Green and then Senator Stedman.
when there is a loss such as this, and you don't reach your deductible, do you always come back to the legislature for to refill, or what do you? I thought that's what risk management was, that you were amassing a fund to cover these incidents.
Through the Chair, Senator Green, the cost of these two items would exceed what we currently have in the risk management budget and expect to have available for payment of these types of claims this year. These are extraordinary, and just given their size, push us up over what we believe is available funding for this year.
Is there a thought to changing the deductible? Oh, never mind. Because aren't you reinsured?
Well, through the Chair, Senator Green, that the in order to get into more of a detailed discussion about the level of deductible and what's most advisable, I'd need to bring our risk manager, Brad Thompson, into the conversation. I'd be happy to do that if you'd like to meet with him.
Senator Stephen.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I'm just curious about the accident with the Fairweather, or the damage, I guess, wasn't really an accident. Damage of the Fairweather bow. And my understanding is that they were running in sea conditions that were below the rated sea conditions of the ship. And I'm wondering if there's any remuneration coming back from the manufacturer, or if the state has held in account for all the physical damage cost was.
Through the Chair, Senator Stedman, I believe that other remedies were pursued and looked at here, and that this is the outcome, that the state is on the hook for this.
Mayor, could you drill down a little deeper for us and bring that information?
I'd be happy to do that, Mr. Chairman.
It's a good question. Senator Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I looked at this Fairweather hull damage, and I thought we had covered that. And why isn't it coming under the Department of Transportation supplemental?
Through the Chair, Senator Olson, the insurance part of this is managed by the Department of Administration, and it would fall into the risk management budget.
Anything else on risk management? Eric, 73-1F.
Mr. Chairman, line 73 is a reduction in the amount that is necessary to pay rental costs for the satellite that the state rents a portion of to provide for public broadcasting. We were able to negotiate a better deal and have this cost decrease.
Eric, why wouldn't you just put this back into the Information Services Fund rather than general fund?
Well, Mr. Chairman, this budget component is separate from the Information Services Fund, or the ETS. It's a general fund component and a separate appropriation, so we would have no ability to do that.
Okay. Other questions?
Okay.
74, section 2.
Mr.
Commerce. Anything else, Eric, that we missed?
Actually, there is one more, Mr. Chairman, and it's on line 84 of your spreadsheet, under fund capitalization.
Oh, that. How did we miss that? Okay. Go ahead, Eric. Lead right in.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Department of Administration is requesting here that $6,243,400 of general fund be appropriated into the Information Services Fund to provide for costs related to our telecommunications operations. That's about $3.2 million of it, and the other remaining will be for costs related to the State of Alaska Telecommunications System, or SATS, and the two piece of that. Mr. Chairman, we removed the SATs and the two-way radio from our EPR, which is our chargeback. Costs had exceeded what we could reasonably collect from departments, and so in an attempt to make the situation more manageable for our client agencies and in order to provide funding for our program, we removed it and are requesting general fund for that piece. And Mr. Chairman, I do understand the division director here. If you have detailed questions,
if we could please, it's still $6.2 million
Pardon me, in general fund, is that correct?
That's correct.
Stan Moore.
Good morning. And for the record, my name is Stan Herrera. I'm the Director for the Enterprise Technology Services Division within the Department of Administration. We're the division charged with providing an oversight of telecommunications and computing services for state agencies, inclusive of participation by the legislature and the court system. The two issues, or the combination of the two issues, I'm going to separate them out a little bit here. The first one is for $3.2 million to return or to move into the Internal Services Fund. This is in regards to our disentanglement that we had of our comprehensive telecommunications contract with ACS, Alaska Communication Systems. That was a comprehensive contract for provision of all telecommunication services. With the disentanglement and the failure of that contract, ETS took back the network and the responsibilities for the network, and with that came increased cost. Portion of this is what specific to this request back to you folks. There are increased costs from the network. There were increased costs from state agencies who were dependent upon that contract to be successful to see some cost savings. One of the issues of that comprehensive contract was the deployment of a technology called Voice over IP, which would have basically made all telephone services in the state of Alaska, approximately 20,000 phones statewide, to act as if it was a local call from the Army to call to Juneau, which would have ridden that network and not incurred long-distance toll charge riding on the private telecommunications networks. The EPR, as Eric has addressed earlier, stands for Enterprise Productivity Rate. That is our chargeback rate that was changed with the advent of the TPA, or Telecommunications Partnering Agreement. That in itself brought up higher costs that was charged back to state agencies. Again, the reasons for those increased costs was that they were hopeful with the deployment and the successful completion of the TPA that the savings would have countered that to increased cost. Those did not come to fruition, and in fact, during the life of the TPA, the 18 months, we had a couple of what we called hold harmless initiatives to where the, approximately $4.3 million to help state agencies pay for increased costs they did not have budgeted in FY03, and approximately $800,000 in FY04. So those two issues, as well as disentanglement costs for taking back the network, depleted the ISF and our ability to some degree to continue to fund telecommunications cost. We made a decision this year, again, as Eric mentioned, to remove SATs from that EPR to try to isolate that because of the fact that SATs does not, SATs being the state's microwave system. I apologize. I talk in acronyms because I live in acronyms and I don't mean to do that to you. That's the state microwave system that is used primarily right now for two-way radio, safety of life issues. Some of our phone circuits right on that, some of our data circuits right on that, but the majority of that serves state agencies that are reliant upon two-way radio communications. I will pause there for a second if there's questions on the wide area network portion of it, or I can move right into the component for the SATs to move out to isolate SATs.
Go ahead and finish, and we'll ask questions as needed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Also, the second part of the request is to move $3.043 million to help support the ongoing cost of SATs, the state's microwave system. This is to help fund the cost of the operations of SATs, which is approximately $2.8 million. And with the contract that we have currently for maintenance and operations of SATs, as well as the costs for internal ETS staff that also assist with two-way radio maintenance and SATs maintenance and operations costs. I believe that's the information I have, unless I missed it, correct?
No.
Questions? So, as I understand it, we're going to take $6.4 million of general fund and put it into a checking account, and then from that checking account, we will pay for technology spread across all agencies. So far, so good?
To the chair, so far, so good.
So if we do that, don't we then just fund all the technology and those, not all the technology, all the technology that we fund with general fund monies, and we forego any ability to pick up any federal money or any other funds that might replace GF?
To the chair, not totally correct. This is a component, one component of the EPR, the chargeback that's charged to state agencies. Part of the cost is the infrastructure cost, and when we took back the network, when I say we, the state, or we, ETS, took back the network, there were increased costs because when we engaged in that contract with ACS, we literally turned everything over to them. So we canceled circuits that we had in what I would call our legacy network before that. So this is to help fund that back, to take those costs back to rebuild this infrastructure. Also part of that is that this length of time that passed during the TPA, we had increased network growth. And that in itself added, just compounded the issues that we had. So we've got contention for bandwidth on the network for part of our e-government. We've taken some measures to try to reduce costs where we can, one of them being our internet management bandwidth software that we have in place now to try to isolate just the internet component of that network contention down to kind of keep those costs at bay, if you will. But with the further deployment of applications, it's a continual pull on the network infrastructure itself.
Maybe I guess I didn't ask my question correctly. By funding this at $6.2 million in general fund, do we not then eliminate the option of picking up any sort of technology charges that would go to other funding sources, i.e. federal? If the federal government is paying 40% of a program, and we have an allowable charge for technology to the federal government for that program, if we fund it at total general fund, we set aside that ability, do we not?
Mr. Chairman, if I might, we are currently working with our federal cost allocation plan contractor, and there may be some ability for us to bill agencies, even though we would receive this general fund infusion under this proposal. So there may be some opportunity, even with this general fund in place, to leverage some additional federal money. But you're quite correct, Mr. Chairman. There are funding sources that arguably would be left out of this mix with a general fund appropriation.
I guess what I'm thinking is, if we could, rather than the 6.2, if we could take some number less than that, spread it around to all the agencies, then they could backfill what was left with their other fund sources. If we could identify the GF component, we could just fund those directly. And then they would go to the other sources of money, and we may end up spending $4 million instead of $6
million. Mr. Chairman, I understand where you're going. I don't know what capacity there would be in other agency budgets for those other fund sources, but that's...
Let's work through that.
We'll hold that one open as a question to work on further. Anything else on this 7C fund capitalization for technology? Okay. That wraps up administration.
That is the end of administration, Mr.
Chairman. That's a good place for us to stop. So the folks that stayed with us all this time, thanks. We'll pick this up again tomorrow morning at 9, and we'll start with whatever comes after administration. We'll try to get through. We'll get through 2 hours tomorrow. Thanks, everybody. Anything else come for the committee? We have floor today at 10:45. We're adjourned.